they were snowboarding and got to a point on the mountain that they didn't feel safe going up or down, so they did the right thing and called.
A recent search and rescue in Haines has a good ending, but leaves residents with a vital reminder. And little scientists and lots of puppets in Skagway this weekend. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Tara Bicknell. Those stories up next. Two Haines boys are home safe after a search and rescue involving more than a dozen local volunteers found them stranded on the side of Mount Rapinski last weekend. Alaska State Trooper Lamb Vetter coordinated the rescue effort from Juneau on Sunday afternoon, working with the Haines Police and Fire Departments.
Well, we received a call that there were two boys ages 14 and 15 on the side of the mountain there in Haines. And evidently they were snowboarding and got to a point on the mountain that they didn't feel safe going up or down. So they did the right thing and called, I believe they called their one of their parents, a mother, and then they in turn called the local police department, who called us.
The boys were uninjured and in their winter clothes, so they were instructed to stay in one place while a search and rescue was mobilized.
They had their cell phones with them, so we could talk to them and make sure they were safe, and told them to stay put, and we would come to them, which is the right thing to do if anybody's in trouble, lost, or in a position like they were, where they weren't comfortable moving. And then we were able to get the fire department and the SAR teams to that area.
Al Badgley, training officer at the Haines Fire Department, says 16 members helped with the rescue. A helicopter was also recruited to help with spotting the boys.
We had some people that were used for trying to be spotters from the road. We had some medical responders with the ambulance. We had some rescue people up on the mountain. And we also had people that were kind of coordinating the actions of all the responders from what's called our ELC. And that's a crucial part of it, to make sure we don't have responders become victims in this process.
The sun was setting by the time the search was underway, which was a big concern for responders.
That was the main concern. It was in the afternoon, and it was going to get dark relatively quickly, so we wanted to locate them as quickly as possible so they didn't have to spend any more time on the mountain than was necessary.
Right after sundown, rescuers made contact with the boys on a steep part of the south side of Mount Rapinski, above the Haines Highway. They were mildly hypothermic, without their backpacks, but generally in good health.
But they were able to spot them and get to them, make sure they were okay. They were mildly hypothermic. At that point, they put some ropes out and were able to do a direct descent down the side of the mountain with the boys. They were in good shape, except, like I say, for the hypothermia, so they were taken to the clinic and be checked out for a hypothermia, warmed up, and everything else worked out okay.
Both Lumbetter and Badgley agreed that calling for help was the smartest thing for the boys to do when they realized they were in an unsafe place.
I think the search and rescue went well. The kids notifying us quickly when they realized they had a problem was a very good point for them to be accredited with. But another issue is making sure that they have some proper gear, because if we would have had to take a little bit longer to find them, they were really not set up to be out overnight. And, I mean, weather conditions were fairly ideal. It wasn't rainy or snowy or any kind of inclement weather. It was just a little cool, but add a little bit of rain on top of the scenario they were in, and it could have been much worse.
Badgley says there are about two or three search and rescues in the Haynesboro each year, some longer than others, some bigger than others.
And some of them are very short-lived. I mean, somebody reports somebody's overdue, and then an hour later, by the time we get started, they came in, or we get some erroneous information to start with, and then all of a sudden they find out that the person's there. But it probably, maybe one a year, turns out to actually be a search where we activate crew members to try to find someone that's either gotten in a position where they shouldn't be, or maybe they just made some poor decisions and got lost.
The system that's in place is a network of local volunteers on call through the Haines Fire Department to help find people who are stranded or injured.
I mean, having the fire department, it's a great exercise for us doing the real thing and trying to coordinate getting people into the field rapidly due to the fact that darkness was approaching, and having people trying to rescue someone at night jeopardizes the safety of the responders because of the terrain issues.
Besides local volunteers, Juneau Mountain Rescue and Sitka Mountain Rescue are internationally recognized groups that can assist with technical recoveries. The Coast Guard helps with water-based rescues, the National Guard is also on hand, and the Civil Air Patrol has aircraft for beach and high-altitude searches. Again, Trooper Lambetter.
But we do have huge resources here in Southeast and throughout Alaska to be able to assist with folks that are in trouble. But the best thing they can do is to help us is to call as soon as possible when they realize they're in trouble, to try to give us the best information to where they're at. If they have a GPS unit with them, then, you know, that's excellent information. We can go right to their location then. And then pretty much stay put. It doesn't help if they continue to move because it makes it harder for us to locate them.
In this case, a mobile phone call from the boys initiated their rescue. Badgley says thinking about communication during trip planning can pay off if a rescue becomes necessary, but so does preparation.
There's a variety of modes of communication, but probably a lot of prevention mechanisms are a key element, making sure you have proper clothing. And don't test the limits of daylight. If it gets dark around 5:30 or 6 o'clock, and if you say, well, I'm going to stay up until 5:15 because it only takes me 20 minutes to get down, that's pushing the envelope.
Badgley suggests telling someone when you go on an outing or taking someone along, saying that sort of preparation is wise since cell phones are not always dependable.
If you've done a trip plan ahead of time and someone knows where you are, then that would make it easier for us to try to find you. If you're going to go up with not much equipment, you need to have some kind of communication, and cell phones may not work ideally. You need to figure out some way to have somebody with you to help you or have ways to contact someone. And a cell phone works, but if you're up against a mountain, it may not work for you.
Geppetto's Junkyard comes to Skagway this weekend, luring residents into the curious art of homemade puppetry. 12 puppeteers / puppet creators from Haines make up the troupe, including Joey Jacobson.
We've got 25 puppets. Every single one of the puppets has been made by one of the members of Geppetto's Junkyard. And there's more than 50 rats.
Yes, rats. The Pied Piper of Hamelin is the feature spot in a series of vignettes that have an original music score, handcrafted stringed characters, and imaginative storytelling.
So the Pied Piper is a wandering piper. He's a stranger who kind of works little miracles in towns as he goes, and he accepts his payment and moves on, kind of like a traveling gypsy. But he travels alone, and he pipes the children away when he doesn't get paid. But it's an old story, and it goes back to the time during the Dark Ages and the Black Plague, when people were disappearing.
The performance by Geppetto's Junkyard is Saturday evening at the Eagles Hall in Skagway. Tickets are available at the door. Skagway's third annual science fair is Friday. Aspiring scientists grades 7 through 12 have spent all school year working on the projects that will be judged and on display. Corey Thole is the Skagway science teacher.
This one is in Skagway, and for the award winners of this science fair will have the opportunity to go to Juneau to compete in the Southeast Alaska State Fair, if they so desire.
A lot of thought and time has gone into Friday's event. Students started with selecting the subjects of their projects when the school year started last fall.
The kids started brainstorming the potential projects and topics that they would like to develop their science fair project around in September. And so it is a long-term project in which they are really given the opportunity to investigate whatever they would like to. They do get the choice in the topic that they want to study, and then they develop their own question. And as long as it has measurable variables where they can actually collect some kind of quantitative data, then it's pretty much up to them, as long as it's a safe experiment, what they want to do.
With 6 grade levels participating and students choosing any subject in science or engineering they're interested in, the fair should be interesting. And the approach, says Thole, helps them learn not only science, but time management, research, and calculations.
The science fair project really allows the students to conduct their own science, to learn more information about the world around them and how it works and what they are ultimately interested in. So it's an opportunity for them to use the scientific method to conduct their own research, and then through that whole process they get to kind of work within product design and doing the background report and in designing their experiment itself. They need to be thinking about what materials that do they need, how much is it going to cost, where are they going to get them, what is the time that is going to be required to set the project up, and the time required for experimentation. So it really not only kind of allows them to go through the scientific process, but it allows them on these long-term projects to kind of fit in some product development and do background research in a specific area, and then plan out their time looking ahead on the calendar.
The Skagway Gym will be the setting for the fair, and it's open to the public. Visitors can expect to learn more about solar flares, rotting teeth, and something about pineapple juice and fingerprints.
In terms of the science fair projects this year, they are all very well done. There is a very wide range of projects, and without kind of picking out one or the other, they pretty much range from what the effects of pineapple juice on people's fingerprints to the magnetic field fluctuations and the effects of solar flares on them, lots of human-based projects, the effects on teeth with soda, and so on and so forth. So there's really quite a wide range, and they're all quite well done, I would have to say.
The public is welcome 1:30 to 4 p.m. on Friday. Judging starts after 4, when the gym will still be open. Top scientists in the categories will have an opportunity to travel to the Southeast Alaska Regional Science Fair in Juneau, where they'll compete against other area winners in mid-March.
The winners of that regional science fair have the opportunity to go to the National Intel Science Fair in San Jose in May.
I'm Tara Bicknell, reporting for KHNS.